takes two people to engage in conflict, but it only takes one person to disengage from the conflict. And that's what the parallel parenting model shifts to, is you have the power, the ability to disengage from that conflict. So the other parent over here might still keep throwing you the bait, but you just don't take it. And you, I think I mentioned, you forget about what happens in the other household, and you just trust that your own parenting will be solid enough that you're giving your children everything that they need.
Welcome to the Thriving in Chaos Project. Certified divorce coach and credentialed mediator Paulette Rigo invites you to grab a favorite beverage, find a cozy seat, soothe your soul, and take a listen. This podcast was created and inspired by our courageous journeys, love for connecting with others, and having meaningful conversations that teach, impact, and heal through sharing our stories. In each episode, Paulette will be joined by some of the most experienced and compelling experts in all things divorce and transformation. Listen to prepare and thrive through the toughest chapters as we reveal our hardships, celebrate our lessons learned, and see the future clearly with encouragement, hope, and joy. Leave feeling empowered and prepared to approach life and maintain our dignity no matter what. Each podcast episode focuses on sharing real conversations from real life situations. Isn't it time you thrived? Welcome to the Thriving in Chaos Project. I'm Paulette, your host. Today, I am blessed to be my sidekick, my co-host, my guest is Michelle Mitchell. And we stumbled upon each other in the rooms, in the halls, in the club of Clubhouse a few weeks ago. And I was intrigued by Michelle's expertise in a certain area of parallel parenting. We are going to delve deep into that topic today, but before, just a brief introduction about Michelle's genius zone. She is a coach with high conflict resolution. She's also an attorney and a badass single mom of two fabulous kids, 8 and 11. She helps parents disengage, and that's much needed, everyone, from high conflict relationships, getting them out of their story, out of court, and stepping them back into their lives. Her unique combination as a certified Martha Beck life coach, a lawyer for almost 20 years, her field of study in psychology, and her own personal family law experience makes Michelle a well-rounded coach, capable of helping parents learn how to disengage from the challenging and proactive co-parenting relationship. So welcome to the podcast, Michelle. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you, Paulette. I'm so happy to be part of your project. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And you know, I used to call this podcast about 3 years ago, just Thriving in Chaos. And it seems a little confusing. And the other wing of my business is Better Career Project, because that's just what it is. It's a project. You don't just wake up and look at your list of things to do and check it off and voila, as the French say, you're done. Divorce is a process and a project. Career development is a project. And life is a project. Not that that's bad. I love me a good project. I'm always up for one, as Michelle and I were kind of joking before the show, that I am reorganizing my pantry. And it's a project, because as soon as you move stuff and you put it in a container and you move it all around and you realize, oh yeah, I don't like the way that looks. And it could be 2 days and everything that you think is going to take you 5 minutes. Well, can anybody else raise their hands and relate to any other scenario in your life when you say, well, I budgeted 30 minutes, but it took me 50, or I budgeted, you know, 5 minutes and it took 15, or I budgeted 8 hours and it took a week, or I budgeted 2 years to whatever. And well, 8 and a half years later, my divorce was final. So it's always a matter of seeing that life is more of a project, and projects can be perceived as work, or they can be perceived as an inspiring, core value, goal-directed entity of getting through life with dignity and thriving, because you can have the mindset of, oh, this is going to be horrible. This is going to be so much work. Or you can feel empowered and inspired to get through something and come out the other side so much better. Would you agree or disagree?
I would absolutely agree. And parenting in general, under any circumstance, is a project, or as I like to call it, an art, something that you're constantly redefining, making better, improving. But especially when, you know, you're parenting in a situation with another parent, it's an ongoing art.
I love that. You know, it is, whether it's an art or a science or a project, it isn't just something super simple that you just cross off your list of things to do. It's something you have to get organized for, research, practice it, and it's a skill, correct? That's a leading question.
Absolutely. Sustained.
It is. Well, I digress. Let's talk a little bit about Clubhouse, where you and I met before we kind of, you know, did your formal introduction. But a lot of people, and I mean a lot of people, and by the time this thing airs, I think that Clubhouse will be a little different. But I was introduced to Clubhouse in December, January by a client of mine, and she sent me an invitation, and I was like, what is this? And being that I'm an all-ins kind of girl, I thought, all right, well, I'm going to give it a try and see if I like it. And at first I thought, oh, another social media platform. Where's the gun? Like, I can't do this. I can't take on anything more. I've got Facebook personal, Facebook business, Facebook group, Facebook private group, right? Then you've got all the groups you belong to. Then you've got Instagram personal, Instagram business, and you've got all the DMs that come in. Then you have LinkedIn and more DMs that come in, which is another talk. You have Twitter, which take it or leave it. Some people love it. Come see, come saw. Then you have just random ones. I don't do the Snapchat thing, but let's just say there are so many. Oh, what's the other one? TikTok, right? I don't do TikTok either, but maybe I'm just too old for TikTok. But all of a sudden this Clubhouse thing came along and I thought to myself, I can't do it. I just can't do it. And even though I do have somebody that I love and honor and cherish, Angelique, hey, Angelique, to guide me and streamline the process and automate the process, I still spend a lot of time creating and writing and putting my heart and soul into my messaging and my branding. What I do isn't just a hobby. It's literally my life's work. And social media, I think, is a way, a manner in which you can share that, but yet have it still be an expression of who you are. But it's so time consuming. Caveat though, I think Clubhouse is different. I can just, and it's only available on your phone still. And to all you non-iPhone people, well, sorry, I'm an iPhone Macaholic. So I only do Mac, which is not a snobby thing. It's just what I'm comfortable with, what I've always had. So of course I just assume, living in my own little delusional world, that everyone has an iPhone, but it isn't on your desktop or your laptop or anything other than that. It's just your phone and it's only audio. Now, in the work I do and the work you do, Michelle, you and I were, you know, speaking candidly before the interview, saying that the reason I like it and you like it is the community and the connection to other like-minded professionals or people struggling in any aspect of their life, whether that be divorce, work, relationships, money, et cetera, et cetera. It's fascinating. So For those of you that are curious, I'd love for you to, Michelle, maybe share your most interesting story or your reasons why you really find it useful.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you on the social media. It's a lot of work. It's exhausting. And so when I got the invitation, I just kind of parked it. I let it sit there. I don't know that I'm going to get back into another social media. And then not the person who invited me, but another longtime friend and mentor reached out to me and told me, you know, a little bit about what it was and what she's seeing on there, got my curiosity. So I started going to these rooms, like, wait a minute, I'm going to a room. And it was just fascinating, the access that I had to people who I would not have otherwise had, people who, you know, I consider mentors, but I don't have a relationship with them, but I have a lot of respect for them in their field of expertise. And suddenly I'm up on stage, you know, in their room, speaking with them, engaging with them on subjects that are really meaningful to me, and meeting people like you, Paulette. I, you know, met you by coming into one of your rooms, and it's just, it feels like a really great way to meet other people and build relationships in a way that certainly in the pandemic I haven't been able to do. And even outside of the pandemic, you know, I just don't have time or the access to some of these really, truly amazing teachers. And also reaching people who I can help and work with. And so that's just, it's really been, I think I've only been on since March, and it's just truly been a game changer for me in that way.
Well, thank you for sharing, because I'm asked about Clubhouse every bloody day, and I'm not sick of talking about it, but I do like having other people speak about their experience, because I feel like a broken record is if I'm like, I work for Clubhouse and I'm getting some sort of like royalty, which is bullshit. I'm not, but, and I'm honest, as those of you that follow me and work with me know, I'm the first to say there's still some bugs that need to be worked out. The sound quality is generally good, but occasionally you have people that think it's appropriate to speak while they're walking down the beach or in the grocery store, and you can't really hear anything. The acoustics are weird. You do need to make sure that you're in a quiet environment, you're not getting disrupted, or hit your mute button if you're on the stage and just listen. It's a lot like eavesdropping in a legal, appropriate way. Not like a voyeuristic, peeping Tom inappropriate way, but you have permission to be a fly on the wall and listen and absorb the wisdom, the experience, and the generosity at heart of literally millions of kick-ass professionals in every profession, every hobby, every culture, age, demographic, socioeconomic constituent from, you name it. So putting a list to it would be stupid because we'd be here for a week and a half. Literally every walk of life I could imagine. And sometimes if you're thinking of doing it, I even suggest having your interest list under 10. They give you this option of choosing interests, and there's like 100, maybe 150. And at first I was like, oh, I like that. Oh, that's cool. Oh, wicked. Oh, awesome. Hanging out and like, yeah, I'll do that. And then bing, 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 bing. They were like, ah, it was a little like Voxer hell. I'm not a fan of Voxer because I can't stand that noise that it makes. So, it was, unsettling, right? That unforeseen amount of bombardment of suggestions of rooms to go in. So I went into my settings and picked like 2, and all of a sudden it was like a day at the beach. So now I'm back up to like 10, and I think I've found that balance. But if you are new and you're getting bombarded, you're getting overwhelmed, take my advice, go into your settings and reevaluate your interest list. Even if you just play with one interest for a week, if you're like, yeah, that didn't interest me, change your interest. And that's what will dictate the rooms you get invited into, the rooms that you're notified for. You can also shut your notifications off for a day, an hour, whatever. So let's say you're in a meeting and you're like, stop it. You can just go settings and say, shut notifications off, and peace and quiet will be yours. So I host All Things Divorce with Alyssa Panitz Wednesdays at 7 and right now Sundays at 8 too. Over the summer, we're just going to do Wednesdays at 7. And co-parenting segue, we chose Wednesdays at 7 because it's a very typical time for co-parenting swapola or daddy visit for midweek visits. And it's either your time to be with or your turn to, you know, have a couple hours of free time, particularly moms that do have more of the, maybe not the 50-50 thing. So that's why we chose it. And it seems to be a popular time. But I love to get in there and create a room with anyone that's just like yourself, a trailblazing, kick-ass professional expert in the field of relationship, all things divorce. So I had to go into that because of the amount of people that have asked me and the fact that you and I met on that. Isn't that cool? People like Michelle and I, she's in San Diego. I'm in Atlanta. We would never have met. And now that people aren't flying and, you know, cocktail partying, like we're just not doing that. I mean, we're still getting out. It's probably a little bit more so here in Georgia than in California, but it is changing. It is the time to meet people. So don't hesitate to jump in. Now, speaking of segues, I invited you here today for a purpose, not the fact that I just don't love to chat with interesting people, but listen, you've been an attorney for 20 years, my God sake, my darling. I'm coaching two women right now that actually are burnt the hell out of being attorney. One in Canada, Kim. Hi, Kim. And another one here, which I will honor her name. And Michelle won't mind. I'm sorry. Kim won't mind. Michelle doesn't mind either. She's burnt out. So, but it's so common because law, whether matrimonial, family law, attorneys are, it's intense. So did you shift to the work you're doing from law because of that? Why are you still practicing? What happened?
It's everything that you said. It's exhausting. I've been in litigation the entire time. So litigation is all about conflict. It's all about winners and losers and very black and white thinking. It is exhausting. It doesn't make for a great work-life balance. And coaching has always been something that has come to me naturally anyway. I've been doing both the coaching and, you know, serving as an attorney, but I have been coaching for 11 years and it has sort of transitioned away from just sort of general coaching to more family coaching, working with the people, the parents in a high conflict relationship. But yes, law, I've been practicing for 19 years and I would say I've been burned out since, I don't know, I don't even want to say how many years, but it's very common amongst attorneys and particularly women attorneys who tend to shoulder, you know, all of the parenting duties as well. The driving force for me to switch over to coaching is to get away from the conflict, which is what I want to help people do in my coaching, is get them to a place where they're outside of conflict, remove the conflict from their parenting relationship with the, you know, the other parent that they're having to work with.
Well, if you're listening and you just so happen to be a family law attorney or any kind of attorney, and you're feeling that same whisper in your soul saying, it's time to get out, don't ignore it, right? Is it the best thing you did or any regret?
No regret whatsoever. It was no longer a whisper. It was a screaming, get the hell out. So the whisper is long gone.
Well, good. And many people, particularly women in long-term marriages with little kids, do that exact opposite with marriage. They ignore the whisper and they stay together for the children, which is not always bad, not always good. Each case is unique. The voice of the soul that's bubbling up and you keep squashing it and squelching it and stepping on it and saying, I don't want to hear that right now. That's not convenient. too much guilt and regret and, too much burden. And like, I feel like a failure and a bad mother and a bad parent and a bad wife. If I, you know, you could see that slippery slope, right? You immediately just go down, down into the, what is that song? Oh, Rock Lobster. Do you remember that? Down, down. It's just, you just can't get out. So now here you are raising your son, and now your 11, your 8-year-old, is a girl or a boy? Yeah. A daughter. Yeah. So you have raising your son and raising your daughter. And as a single mom, kudos for you.
Thank you.
All the single mothers. Now we're going to have to talk about many other songs. And this, you know, graceful navigation of the co-parenting journey, you've become quite astute and advanced in it. So can you explain a new model, or one that I would like to think will be a new model, of what's known as commonly, we have co-parenting plans and co-parenting apps, but we don't have parallel parenting apps and parallel parenting plans. That's a tough one with the P's. So why not? And how do we make that shift?
Yeah, thank you. So I still believe that the co-parenting model is great and it's the goal, but the people who I work with are dealing with a high conflict situation. So we already know about 50% of marriages end in divorce. And of those, 30% involve high conflict, truly high conflict. And then of those 30%, 70% of the 30% high conflict also involve someone with a personality disorder. So we're talking the narcissistic personality disorders, the borderlines, the sociopathic. And so in those situations, it's very hard to use a co-parenting model. Even if, you know, there's one parent who's trying to use it, trying to have any sort of let's get on the same page way of parenting just doesn't work, because when you're dealing with someone in a high conflict parenting situation, any contact is going to equal conflict. And you just have to get out of that dynamic. It's not good for the parents, but most importantly, it's horrible for the children. And that's going to carry over to them. And so there's another way. Not a lot of, you know, coaches talk about this, but parallel parenting actually is perfect for, you know, the high conflict relationships. And in parallel parenting, each household has their own set of rules. So you're not trying to get together to get on the same page about anything. It's just, hey, in this house, in our house, these are the set of rules, values, ideals that we embody. And whatever happens over in the other house, we're going to forget about that. That's for, you know, the children to work out with that other parent. And so we don't get involved in, well, hey, what's your bedtime at, you know, dad's house or mom's house or whoever the other parent is. And instead, just focusing on what happens in our house. And it really eliminates most of the conflict, because in a high conflict situation, you really want to have as little contact as possible, be it, you know, in person or phone, whatever the contact, you want to try to eliminate most of that to sort of settle down your nervous system, as well as settle down the children's nervous system, and really allow everyone to engage in, you know, the role in that particular household. I have clients who often ask me, well, how do you know, isn't that going to create conflict? Because, you know, my ex wants me to get on the same page as them, and they want to talk about everything. And initially, if you set the boundary and you hold the boundary, there might be a little bit of extra conflict created, because people with high conflict personalities don't want to be told, you know, that they can't do something, or they don't like boundaries. And so there might be some initial pushback. But if you set, and more importantly, hold the boundary, then that person's going to have to adjust. And by boundary, I mean, if you just don't engage over, you know, whatever app you use, the Family Wizard or whatever app you're using to communicate, then if you just don't engage in that, then there's nothing to come back to. And so, you know, one of my mentors always says, there's takes two people to have to engage in conflict, but it only takes one person to disengage from the conflict. And that's what the parallel parenting model shifts to, is you have the power, the ability to disengage from that conflict. So the other parent over here might still keep, you know, throwing you the bait, but you just don't take it. And you, I think I mentioned, you forget about what happens in the other household, and you just trust that your own parenting will be solid enough that you're giving your children everything that they need.
Wow. Yeah, I'm trying to kind of walk through in my head how that works sometimes. And for some instances, I can see how it wouldn't be a problem at all. But I could see in other instances, I'm putting myself in the shoes of, say, an 8-year-old or a 12-year-old or 16, even though they can make their own rules, but not their own rules. Well, they like to do that, right, everyone? But with the specifics, Michelle, like something like what kind of toothpaste? Maybe one parent likes Crest with fluoride and the other's like, no, we're using organic baking soda, like out of it. I mean, not the toothpaste, but like the real thing. You know, I use EcoDent. So I'm like, what the heck's EcoDent? But, or diet, you know, one parent's into Ritz crackers and the other's like gluten-free. We don't eat that shit here. You know, like, how do you manage that without the confusion of the child saying, like feeling a little bit of like, I don't want to say schizophrenia, but and I don't see it as a conflict really, like butting heads, but more of like kind of living parallel lives. And is it confusing for the child? For me, I'm such a habituated person, but again, I'm not an 8-year-old. So I'm just trying to empathize. How does that work?
Yeah, so that's actually a perfect example of something that seems very neutral, you know, hey, maybe I can get the other parent on board with feeding our kid gluten-free. And in a normal, healthy, two healthy individuals, that can happen. But when you have a high conflict situation, even the slightest decision can
like toothpaste
can explode because it's a contact. And anytime there's a contact, it's just ripe for conflict. And so, you know, the way that that gets handled is you fix it on the front end. And so, you know, if the child has a preference for toothpaste, like, oh, you know, at the other house, I'm getting the Crest and I know that, I really want this more natural toothpaste or whatever it is, then there's a couple of things you can do. One, you can educate. And if they're old enough, you know, you teach them about the differences. And if, you know, they really want one type of toothpaste in your home, but it's not at the other home, then you can, you know, give them the option. Would you like me to get you another tube and you can take it back and forth? You know, maybe the other parent will let you use it. They just don't want to buy it. And if not, that's okay. You know, at the end of the day, using one type of toothpaste is not going to destroy the child. And of course, there might be, you know, issues dealing with abuse or something. And that's when you get another professional involved. But most things are not going to be detrimental. Now, often a parent thinks they're going to be detrimental, like, you know, hey, dad's feeding you a non-organic apple and that's going to kill you. But it's not true. It's not true. And so you really have to shift your mindset.
Not unless they eat 100 of them.
That's true.
That was a bad joke.
But so really just educating and connecting with your children, educate them, you know, give them the facts. Eventually they're going to be the ones advocating for themselves once they're old enough. So you're just teaching them the tools.
Yeah.
And you're staying out of it. You're keeping neutral. That's the most important thing, is that you're keeping neutral, staying neutral, because you don't ever want the child to perceive that you're, you know, judging the other parent's decision. Whether it's toothpaste or bedtime or whatever it is, you just stay neutral. And, you know, I understand that, you know, dad lets you stay up until 11 o'clock on a school night at his house. And that's okay. That's, you know, dad's rules. But in our house, this is what works best. And so we're going to have this different, you know, bedtime. And these are the reasons why I think it works for our family. So you give them the information, you teach them. And then eventually when they're older, they'll choose what they, you know, want to advocate for. But most decisions, and that's the hardest piece for my clients, is realizing that their kids are going to be okay. If you model good parenting, they're going to be okay. They really just need to get, you know, the whole ball of wax from one household, and they're going to be okay. And there's things that each parent is going to do that might not be the best decision, but you just have to focus on what happens when you're in my home, and keep that connection between you and your children. And by letting go of what, you know, mom's doing in her household or dad's doing in his household, by letting that go, you as a parent are going to be more present with your children, build on that connection. And that also, if you build that connection, that's what gives you credibility with your children to be able to then, you know, do some of these like teachable moments and build them up. So it really is a huge shift, and parents resist it at first because they really, you know, that bedtime over at the other household is going to destroy the kid in their mind. And so it's really hard for them to let go of that. But once they can let go of that co-parenting, getting on the same page model, it really is a huge shift in reducing the amount of conflict.
I can see that. It is a commitment and a project and a practice to be able to rethink that, not being able to control the whole, you know, scene. I'm curious, in practicing the art of parallel co-parenting, how do the parents handle who pays for what?
First of all, I love that you called it an art. you know, so there's a lot of different ways to do that. Again, one of my mentors, and I love this actually, it's not always possible depending on the financial differences with parents, but he always says, just act as if you are the only parent. So if your child needs a jacket, you get a jacket. You don't need the other parent. You just fix it. You just meet their needs as if you're the only parent. And then, you know, they can take care of whatever happens in their household. Now, obviously, there are situations where that's not always possible. And some of the apps, I'm most familiar with Our Family Wizard. They do actually have it built into the app where either parent can upload the invoice from whatever it is that they paid for, seek reimbursement. It notifies the other parent directly. So even then, you don't have to engage, you know, you don't have to send an email, hey, I, you know, spent this on a sporting event or something, can you please reimburse me? It's automated and it goes straight to the other parent, eliminating the need to discuss it between the parents.
Right. I do love that concept that you just said, just meet the needs of the child and act as if you're the only parent. I could see, I'm reminiscing way back many years ago when I was embarking on my divorce, and how the kids would come to me and say, I need a calculator. I need a TV. It was never, you know, a hamburger. It was always like, I need a new phone, you know, and I'm like, okay. And before you know it, there was like a $6,000 bill because, you know, I'm like, what am I doing? So, and they didn't really need it, or it was more like they wanted it, but, and that's, I'm just being a little bit, you know, dramatic with my example, but there were certain times when I felt like, do I just buy it and shut the, you know what, up? Or do I make a stink and say, hey, do you want to split it? Or I don't think you really need that. And they're like, well, what do you care? You know, like raising teenagers. So be careful. You're getting there. You got the 8 and 11 year old. You know what's coming, right? Right,
Michelle? It's coming. It's already.
Yeah. There's just, whoa, something about, I think with girls, being that I, you know, was with teenage girls a lot of my life, being in modeling and dance, let's just say I hung around with a lot of estrogen and progesterone and birth doula. And oh my goodness, I've had my share of estrogen overload. the, you know, girls are challenging when they're 11 to 16.
That small period of time. That,
yeah. And then boys are challenging between, say, 15 to 20 or 19. It's just a different craziness. But I was assuming that the boys would outgrow the, you know, chip on their shoulder like my daughter had by the time she was 16. She was like, yeah, whatever, I'm moving on with my life. But boys, you know, the hormones kick in different. They're not quite as emotional when they're younger. It's just different. So, divorce, co-parenting, parallel parenting, and high conflict. It's a big cauldron of emotions and control and. Like you could, the only thing worse would be like pouring gasoline on it with, you know, criticism in court. I can't think of anything that's more contentious and more emotional, meaning your expertise is so needed. Now, tell me a little bit about Martha Beck and her coaching. I know nothing about it. I do believe I've read one of her books, but educate me. I'd love to learn more.
Yeah, she defined the term life coaching. She's a psychologist and she just started doing what we now call coaching. And she jokes about how someone said, like, you know, you're a coach. And she's like, I don't know. I don't even know what that is. She's a best-selling author. I'm not sure which book you've read, but she's, you know, written tens of books on parenting, on coaching, on finding your, you know, your true North Star. And she's just an advocate in living your best life and just a truly wonderful human being. Parented a child with special needs, and her coach training was, you know, 11, I think I went through it, actually it's been 13 years ago now. And it was just a really transformational process of getting to know myself in a way that I had never before. And yeah, she defines badass. You look up badass, there's Martha Beck.
I am going to go buy a few more of her books. I'm aware of her mission and her, shall we say, her platform. I myself stumbled into life coaching from Cheryl Richardson. She's from Massachusetts, up in the Newburyport area. So maybe it was just because she was a New England chick. I ran into her. She wrote a book called Life Makeover. Well, I think her first book was actually called Take Time for Your Life. And when I read the title of that book, Take Time for Your Life, that just like felt like somebody stabbed me in the back and twisted it. Like, well, yeah, I should be doing that, but I think I'm not doing that. I didn't even know that there was such a thing as taking time. I felt, and she asked 7 questions, like, do you feel drained? Do you feel like selfish? Like all those things. And I was like, yes, yes, yes. It's, you know, do you feel like self-care is a dirty word? You know, I forget, I'm bastardizing this, Cheryl, I apologize. But that was my introduction to what life coaching was. And this was 2001, 2002, about 20 years ago, when I thought that, you know, life coaching was some sort of like, I don't know, weird thing. although I'm not a life coach, I've never considered myself a life coach. I have learned a lot about life and worked with Rod Stryker, who wrote The Four Desires. And I have studied his work intensely and have been guiding hundreds of people through The Four Desires journey, which is much more about your dharma and finding your life's purpose than it is getting you through the nuts and bolts of life coaching. But I see some really beautiful parallels there about goal setting, core values, understanding yourself, self-study, and also most importantly, the sabotaging behavior that has been preventing you from living your best and greatest life, as they say. So I am all on board for anyone and anything that gets a person from feeling stuck, to unstuck, feeling less joy to more joyful. So it's intriguing. I want to wrap up our conversation about disengaging from conflict. That is a concept that many people think is crazy shit, woo-woo. Like, how do you disengage from conflict? So how do you, Michelle?
Well, it's just like we talked about. You don't take the bait. You don't respond to, you know, every email, every accusation. And it's one thing my clients have a really hard time with. Like, well, but he said he accused me of this. How can I not respond to that? The judge is going to read it and he's going to think that it's true. And so really shifting the mindset of no, you know, you get to choose your rules and play by your rules, not them. Don't let them dictate how you respond. And so, you know, really going in and reading an email line by line and stop after each sentence. Okay, is this a fact or is this just, you know, the BS that they're spewing? And if it is, then I don't respond, you know? And so really going through and looking at all of the stuff that they're being sent, hopefully, you know, through email or one of these services, they're really in a high conflict situation, should never be a face-to-face, let's talk about our parenting. That should just never happen. But if they're reviewing their emails, you know, really picking it apart and deciding, making a conscious decision, what do I need to respond to? And then respond to only that one thing and respond as if you're in business. You know, so if you're in business and someone accuses you of something, you're not going to fly off the handle and let your emotions get into it. You're going to be calm and measured. Or if they're in court, it's the same thing, because often two people go to court and one of them is high conflict, the other one is not. But as soon as that high conflict personality, as soon as they start, you know, splitting up on the state, on the, in the courtroom and making up false accusations, the other person is going to get triggered if they don't check themselves. And they're going to end up looking like they're the ones creating the conflict. So it's really important, you know, for my clients to take a deep breath before you respond, repeat the question in your mind, you know, make the determination, is it really something I need to respond to? And if so, how can I respond in a way that does not engage in the conflict, but rather just addresses this one tiny little fact that needs to be addressed? Mm. And, you know, it's an art. It's an art. It takes practice. But it really, really is effective in disengaging from the conflict, because you need the conflict, or you need the connection. You need to connect with the other person in order to have the conflict. So if you disengage, you don't respond, then, you know, they can spin out of control still, but you're calm, you're not engaging in the conflict.
Mm. Well, where were you 20 years ago when I needed you, Michelle? It's why I created Better Divorce Academy and wrote Better Divorce Blueprint. It's why I started this podcast 3 years ago. It's why I'm on Clubhouse. It's why I participate in summits, conferences, keynote speaking, webinars, masterclasses, retreats, etc., etc. There is so much consternation, conflict, you know, ugliness, and it doesn't have to be that way. Yes, litigation is necessary in many cases. If both parties are not willing to be transparent, open, completely honest, win, lose, or draw. And there's really no winner or loser in divorce, people. There just isn't this whole feeling of being, you know, win and representing somebody. I understand I probably should go to law school. After 8.5 years of an experience, I feel like I have my PhD in divorce, not PhD in law, but just understanding the little nuances of it. It is so important that you find the right team, be that legal, financial, residential, mortgage, parenting, wellness, mental health. And it's really hard to keep all those branches of the divorce journey separate because, you know, you want to stay in your lane. If you use a therapist as for legal advice, well, that probably wouldn't work out so well. And if you use your attorney as a therapist, well, I hope you get used to $6,000 to $12,000 bills every month because it could be costly. And therapists are not trained in the law and lawyers are not trained in therapy, although many of them are empathetic and compassionate and quite kind. They don't have the time or the training to do that. It's someone like myself and Michelle, her expertise is where we just, I hope you gained some knowledge. I know I did. I'm a little bit more of that glue that keeps the whole process unstuck, you know, and a well-oiled machine to keep it moving forward and help everyone stay in control and try to stay out of court, to divorce with dignity, even in high conflict situations, and to create your next chapter of your life that is waiting for you and calling you, beckoning you to let go of all of the old habits that just were not working. So thank you for your time. You're brilliant and gorgeous. And what is the best way for people to learn more about you and your work and be able to follow you and stay in touch?
Well, Clubhouse, of course, is always fun.
yeah.
So I am on Clubhouse, but aside from Clubhouse, they can reach me at coachmichelle.club or michellemitchell.club.
Gorgeous.
As well as all of the other, you know, Instagram.
I know.
I'm on all of it.
And are you Michelle Mitchell? Is that your handle?
Michelle Mitchell. I'm on Instagram. I'm Coach Michelle SD, SD for San Diego.
Gotcha.
And on, I believe in Clubhouse, I'm Michelle NSD.
Gotcha. Okay. So for those of you that aren't on Clubhouse, you are new to it, you have a handle. So it's your little at in your name. I'm Paulette Rigo. It is suggested that you don't use your business name. It is your personal name. So I know some people break the rules, but you know, hey, that's just the way life goes. So thank you. You're great. Ooh. And I really love that we had this conversation. I am always fascinated to learn more. I'm a constant learner and thriving and striving to learn as much as I can to not only my own journey and my own professional experience, but to help my clients and so many people. It really is my mission to change the method, the process, and the stigma and the trajectory and paradigm of the divorce journey and outcome. So thank you for joining the podcast, Michelle. I'm so honored that you took the time to share it with me.
Thank you, Paulette. And I love your divorce with dignity. That really sums it up because again, it comes back to just the one person. You can choose to do it with dignity, even if the other person doesn't. So that's brilliant. That sums it up.
Yeah, it isn't easy, everyone. But just remember, no matter what, it's your responsibility to keep thriving in the chaos.
Thanks for tuning in. And make sure if you want to talk to us or ask us questions, you can always email us at thrivinginchaospodcast@gmail.com. See you next week.